newscast includes Mel Gertov, David Rosenberg, and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lauren Schmidt, Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Simone Perez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. First, the Trump corruption machine goes on. The corruption endemic that always comes with the Trump presidency is on in full force these days. There's Trump's Bitcoin operation, Mar-a-Lago hosting of international conferences, and endless influence peddling. There's his special Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff's son, soliciting real estate investments from the same governments, such as Qatar, that are mediating peace talks. The investment fund is headed by the senior Witkoff, who also is involved in a cryptocurrency venture with Trump. Then there's Tom Homan, the border czar, filmed accepting a bag filled with $50,000 in an FBI sting operation. The money was apparently given to Homan in expectation of government contracts. Homan has escaped prosecution, and no one seems to know where the money is. And there's Jared Kushner, engaged in the biggest buyout in history. The video game maker Electronic Arts is going private in a $55 billion deal that's funded by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund and a Jared Kushner-backed investment firm called Affinity Partners. The deal requires U.S. government review by the Committee on Foreign Investment, but with Kushner involved in Middle East policymaking, is there any question that the deal will be approved? Here's another even bigger corrupt action now underway. Trump's decision to bail out Argentina with a $20 billion loan. At one level, the bailout is a kick in the shins for U.S. soybean growers. They are already suffering from Trump's China policy, which has led the Chinese to boycott U.S. soybeans. Argentina's soybean farmers will replace Americans. So here's Argentina getting a huge loan while American farmers go under. But that's not the corrupt part of the deal. Judd Legum, for Popular Information, writes that the bailout specifically benefits a billionaire hedge fund manager, Rob Citrone, who is a close friend of the U.S. official who announced the Argentina deal, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. Citrone is heavily invested in Argentina, and in the past has helped make Bessent a billionaire too. So Bessent owes Citrone a big favor. Citrone stands to lose plenty if the right-wing government of Javier Milei goes under due to massive debt, high inflation, and widespread unemployment. The U.S. bailout is an attempt to keep Milei's government in power as midterm elections approach. No wonder Milei is one of Trump's latest favorites. Next, Hamas accepts a deal, or does it? Donald Trump must think the Nobel Peace Prize is within reach following Hamas's acceptance of a plan for ending the Gaza war. Israeli commentators are describing the deal as a huge setback for Benjamin Netanyahu because he had to accept Trump's orders. Under that plan, Hamas, in exchange for the release of Palestinian prisoners, will release all remaining hostages and the remains of others, will disarm, and will accept an Israeli security presence in Gaza that eventually will be internationalized. But will it disarm? wield the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, which supposedly is now in a defensive posture, release its grip on Gaza and stop bombing. Trump has demanded that the bombing stop. Will the Palestinian people who have fled be able to return to what's left of their homes? Will the Israeli far right drop its opposition to the plan, since it is saying it will withdraw support of Netanyahu if Hamas continues to exist? In short, much remains to be determined. Netanyahu's takeover of the West Bank may mean an end to the two-state solution. Claire Parker writes for the Washington Post that Netanyahu's government and its settler allies are already laying the groundwork to eventually extend Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank. Within the past year, she says, Israel has, first, approved new Jewish settlements at a record rate, while settlers have established an unprecedented number of informal outposts. Next, they've advanced projects put on hold for decades, including a plan to develop a significant tract of land east of Jerusalem that could thwart Palestinian aspiration for statehood by dividing the West Bank in two. Next, approved a plan to resume land registration in the West Bank, suspended 6 decades ago, that could force Palestinians to produce property documents from before Israel's establishment to prove ownership. Next, ordered the extended deployment of the Israeli army for the first time into Palestinian refugee camps. And finally, lent support to radical settlers whose rapidly escalating attacks on Palestinians and their property are designed, residents and human rights activists say, to drive Palestinians off their land. Taken together, these developments ensure that a separate Palestinian state will be impossible to create, just as Netanyahu said as recently as mid-December, quote, a Palestinian state will not be established. This place is ours. We will also take care of our heritage, our country, and our security. Unquote. In other news, Trump's latest transactions with China. Donald Trump has been hankering for an invitation to visit China since day one of his second term. Tariffs and the future of TikTok have stood in the way, but now he says China has reached an agreement on TikTok. Oracle, the multinational technology corporation headquartered in Texas and controlled by Larry Ellison, Trump's billionaire buddy, will oversee Americans' data and monitor TikTok under the deal. That arrangement is expected to pave the way for Trump to meet Chinese President Xi Jinping at a regional summit of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Group at the end of October in South Korea. APEC is a 21-member group mainly concerned with trade relations. Trump said he would visit China in the early part of next year. Trump may be prepared to sacrifice Taiwan in order to create further incentives for China to strike a trade deal. News reports indicate that he has held back a $400 million weapons deal with Taiwan. Is it a negotiating tactic with China, or might Trump be applying new pressure on Taiwan to increase its own defense spending? Taiwan has already committed to a major boost in military spending and to buying U.S. arms rather than relying on U.S. military aid. China hawks in Washington are reportedly nervous about China's ability to obtain chip-making tools despite U.S. government restrictions. Reuters reports that, quote, gaps in efforts by the U.S. and allies to restrict China's ability to manufacture advanced computing chips have allowed China to buy nearly $40 billion of sophisticated chip-making gear, according to a bipartisan investigation by U.S. lawmakers, unquote. The Trump administration is being blamed for not closing those gaps out of the president's desire for a big trade deal with the People's Republic of China. Next, the U.S. ambassador to Canada has regrets. America's ambassador to Canada, Peter Hoekstra, said during a luncheon in Halifax, quote, I'm disappointed that I came to Canada, a Canada where it is very, very difficult to find Canadians who are passionate about the American-Canadian relationship. Hoekstra, who previously was the Republican Party chair in Michigan, host to election deniers, said he had hoped to make progress on energy, defense, and other issues. But the Canadians' reaction to Trump's tariffs, elbows up, a hockey term for alert defense, and Trump's desire to make Canada a U.S. state have prevented such cooperation, something Hoekstra neglected to mention. Although tariffs on some Canadian goods have been dropped by Trump, the average tariff rate stands at a very high 35%, including on autos, steel, and aluminum. So it's the Canadians who are the most disappointed. Canada will agree to a deal that's in the best interest of Canadians, said Prime Minister Mark Carney. It should not surprise anyone, including the U.S. ambassador. When it comes to the United Nations, the U.S. is a deadbeat. Overlooked when Donald Trump addressed the UN General Assembly on September 23rd is that his administration has failed to pay its UN bills. Besides some money owed from 2024, according to the United Nations, Washington owes more than $3 billion. The figure includes $826 million owed as part of the 2025 regular budget assessment, which for the U.S. is 22%, and the rest in arrears for past years or unpaid peacekeeping operation commitments. A few weeks ago, Trump's team announced it wouldn't pay some $393 million in State Department contributions to peacekeeping activities and $445 million in separately budgeted peacekeeping aid. Trump has already stopped supporting various UN agencies, such as the Human Rights Council and UNESCO. Someone might remind Trump that under the United Nations Charter, the U.S. could lose its vote in the General Assembly if it doesn't pay up. That would put it alongside a few other countries, including Venezuela. Next, Trump puts a price on H-1B visas. In a move intended to create more work opportunities for Americans, but more likely to create problems for high-tech U.S. corporations, universities, and others, President Trump announced a $100,000 fee for new visas for skilled foreign workers. Corporations that rely heavily on such workers, such as Amazon and Walmart, worry that the regulation will discourage their employment and reduce their competitiveness. I think this is going to mean that we're fighting the artificial intelligence war against China with one hand tied behind our back, said the head of a tech industry coalition. There's a limited number of top talent in AI, and some of that is foreign-born. Trump seeks a new head for the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Donald Trump only wants department heads who report good news. He fired the head of the BLS, Erica McIntyre, in July for reporting bad news on unemployment. She said, quote, "Markets have to trust the data that are not manipulated. Firing your chief statisticians for releasing data you do not like, it has serious economic consequences." She notes the international impact of putting a Trump loyalist in her place. Several countries have gone down a similar route, including Argentina, Greece, and Turkey, and that's not a good list, she said. The resulting loss of trust in economic statistics led these countries to worsening economic crises, higher inflation, and higher borrowing costs, she said. She also said the Bureau is facing an uncertain moment, and that Americans should broadly be concerned about the future of key economic institutions, including the Federal Reserve, which has also been under heavy attack from the White House. Trump nominated E.J. Antoni, chief economist at the conservative think tank The Heritage Foundation and a co-author of Project 2025, to replace McIntyre. He is a vocal critic of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But then Trump pulled the nomination after Antoni's many scurrilous social media postings were revealed. A White House spokesperson would not address those postings, instead citing Antoni's patriotism and great work as an economist. And while the world waits on the next nominee, the administration has used the excuse of the government shutdown to stop issuing labor statistics. Vladimir Putin orders new conscriptions for his war. The Russian president has ordered the conscription of 135,000 men by the end of 2025, the largest conscription drive in 9 years. In the 3 years since Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, it has drafted an average of 127,000 men every fall. What this new conscription tells me is that, far from considering how to end the war, Putin is determined to sacrifice any number of lives to win it. Why Navalny died, new evidence. We always knew that Russia's leading dissident, Alexei Navalny, had died at the hands of Putin's regime. Now we have clear proof that he was poisoned in an Arctic region penal colony, where he had been sentenced. The Washington Post reports that, quote, two laboratories tested samples from Navalny that had been smuggled out of the country, and they had concluded he had been poisoned. His wife said this in a video statement. She had been unable to obtain their final reports, detailing what kind of poison had been used, and called on them to release their findings. Now we know. Finally, a feel-good story. A USAID lifeboat crew saves lives. This from The Guardian. After losing their jobs abruptly when the Trump administration slashed U.S. overseas aid earlier this year, a group of dedicated workers at the U.S. Agency for International Development decided to launch their own rescue package. Refusing to wallow in misery, Rob Rosenbaum, a former USAID economist, and a group of like-minded former agency staff began efforts to save some of the vital programs that faced closure after the cuts. Now, almost 80 projects have been saved by a fund-matching service run by Rosenbaum and former USAID staff. With $110 million in new funding, the team estimates it will benefit 40 million people, including many children under five. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. The Palestinian digital and human rights group Hamle has released a new report titled Meta's Role in Amplifying Harmful Content During Genocide in Gaza. Meta is the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. The report says that the company has failed to protect Palestinians from incitement and hate speech in Hebrew. It talks about what it calls Meta's bias policies and its complicity in enabling hate speech during Israel's war on Gaza, while at the same time ignoring the provisional measures issued by the International Court of Justice in 2024, which called for the prevention and punishment of direct and public incitement to commit genocide. KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Eric Seip, the U.S. national organizer for Hamle, about Meta's role in Gaza.
Meta and the Palestinian digital world, what's the relationship there? What does Meta have to do with what goes on in Palestine in terms of digital communication?
I mean, Meta is extremely important globally. It is the largest social media platform, and it is also the largest social media platform in Palestine. And when talking about the realities on the ground of the ongoing genocide in Gaza and the decades of human rights violations that Palestinians have had to deal with through apartheid and occupation, social media has been an avenue for Palestinians to be able to try to document and tell a more honest version of the reality in which they live in when the mainstream media has by and large not told an honest telling.
If so much is being destroyed, they're going after hospitals and universities, and the utility lines are probably destroyed, and fiber optic cables as well. And so does this affect people's ability to communicate?
Certainly, yes. Actually, at Hamle, we're a Palestinian digital rights organization that has actually launched a campaign that is called #ReconnectGaza that raises awareness around the intentional destruction of the ICT infrastructure across Gaza that shows documentation of the Israeli military intentionally destroying any sort of telecommunications infrastructure and issuing blackouts across Gaza that generally coincide with large military operations that we know perpetuate mass violations of human rights and make it impossible for Gazans to be able to communicate not only with each other, but also the outside world, and make it much more difficult to document these violations of human rights, be it on social media or through any form of digital communication.
What is Meta doing in terms of content? Are they suppressing or trying to suppress what the Palestinians are trying to get out to the world?
Yeah, so this is a long documented issue that precedes the current genocide in Gaza by quite a bit. Actually, back in 2021, there was an independent human rights impact assessment that was done to look at Meta's content moderation policies in Palestine and Israel. And it found, this independent investigation that Meta accepted the findings of found that Meta was over-moderating Palestinian Arabic content and was under-moderating Hebrew-Israeli content, and that Meta's policies were leading to adverse human rights impacts for Palestinians. And the report issued 21 recommendations for Meta to change their stance and improve their policies. And actually, in the fall of 2023, in September, right before the beginning of the current genocide, Meta came out with their final report showing that what they were stating, taking care of all of the issues and recommendations without providing any actual tangible proof that they had made any changes. And then we saw all of these issue areas be exacerbated directly after that as the genocide began. So certain things that we saw, for example, were there is a confidence interval that Meta's automated content moderation systems use. So that's basically saying a automated system has to be this level of certain that a piece of content is violating the policies before it gets taken down. And at the beginning of the genocide, Meta lowered that confidence interval specifically for Palestinian, for Arabic content coming out of Palestine to 40%, and then again to 25%. So Meta's automated systems only needed to be 25% sure that Arabic content coming out of Palestine was violating policies to be taken down, which resulted in a mass takedown of content that was not violative in any way, shape, or form. They did not do the same for Hebrew-Israeli content. And another example is that there were two popular hashtags that were being utilized by both Israelis and Palestinians to talk about what was happening in October of 2023. And one was in Arabic, one was in Hebrew. The Arabic version of the hashtag was almost immediately blocked. The Hebrew version of the hashtag was never blocked. It is also just not for Palestinians in Palestine, but for folks globally that are posting any sort of content that is pro-Palestinian, a very common experience that you receive some sort of censorship, whether that be actually taking down the content or deplatforming your account entirely, or whether that be what folks refer to as shadow banning, where the platform goes in and intentionally lowers the viewability of your content so less people will see and interact with your content. So these are just kind of broad strokes of very common and obvious violations against Palestinian free speech that, Meta has perpetuated.
So would you say that Meta is consciously promoting Israeli views over Palestinian views?
What I can say is that Meta is obviously censoring pro-Palestinian content that oftentimes, from our understanding, is not violative, harmful, or violent in any way, shape, or form. And they are actively platforming genocidal, openly, explicitly genocidal rhetoric that has been flagged multiple times on their platform, sometimes in English, oftentimes in Hebrew. But you can go today on multiple of Meta's platforms and go to leading Israeli government officials and military officials, whether it be Benjamin Netanyahu or Yoav Gallant or military leaders, and you can find posts that are openly talking about flattening and erasing Gaza and talking about there are no innocent Gazans and everyone in Gaza should be killed, and also trying to elicit arguments of collective punishment against all Palestinian people that are obviously violative for many, many reasons, and just really horrible and disgusting content that are on their platform to this day.
And is that somehow, in a weird sort of way, an advantage for the Palestinian cause because it openly shows how brutal the Israelis are, how nasty they are?
I don't know that I can necessarily comment on whether it is positive or not for the Palestinian cause, but what I can say is that it is deeply problematic and is a wave of genocidal energy, I guess I could say, that has pushed for the level of death, violence, and destruction that is taking place in Gaza. And not only are there sort of openly genocidal comments, but there are also things like ad campaigns where the Israeli government is openly running an ad campaign to find bulldozer operators that will be able to operate bulldozers in the West Bank to destroy Palestinians' homes. And that ad campaign, which is a paid for placement ad campaign, so that should theoretically have a higher level of scrutiny because Meta is accepting money to artificially increase the reach of which that content is viewable, and that content has been flagged multiple times, is not being taken down in any way, shape, or form. And in that way, Meta is actively and very explicitly profiting from the mass violations of human rights Israel is perpetuating against Palestinian people.
And what about the findings of the International Criminal Court or the Court of Justice? What's been Meta's role in that and in either suppressing or allowing that information out?
So what I can say is that in the International Court of Justice's preliminary findings, they issued actions that all parties, which not only include state actors, but also include corporate actors, need to take any action possible to ensure that they are not helping in the facilitation of genocidal acts. And Meta has not shown any action in alignment with those provisional findings. And we do also now know from a UN independent commission that the United Nations has found that Israel is in fact committing a genocide, something that I think many of us have known for quite some time. But now the United Nations has issued its own finding on that. So there is really no rationale for Meta to say that they are not aware of their actions. And there's no argument to be made for why they have not taken further action on this.
And so the acknowledgement that you mentioned before about Meta admitting its mistakes or whatever it would call them, there's been no improvement since then, you would say?
To have the most honest account possible, I would say that there has been slight improvements that have been extremely insufficient. Historically, Meta has been very, very bad at moderating Arabic content, which is the third most used language across their profiles and platforms. So obviously warrants a large amount of investment, and they have made marginal improvements in moderating their Arabic content. But I think that that has really been the only way that I have seen any sort of improvement. But outside of that, there has been a huge lack of action. One of the primary findings was that there was no Hebrew classifier, which essentially helps moderated automated systems find specific terms, words that are very likely to be violative, that flags them for the system and then allows that content to be taken down more swiftly. And those are very much working for Arabic, for English, for most languages. And it has been again and again pointed to Meta as one of the primary issues for why there's so much violative content in Hebrew. And they have not shown any proof that they have a functioning Hebrew classifier that is helping them to moderate this content.
So what do you think accounts for Meta's behavior on this issue? Do you think it's just that they're going along with the Western media in general, or is it something more specific? Do they have certain connections with the Israeli government?
One connection that is very, very clear is that the Israeli government issues tens of thousands of voluntary takedown requests to Meta every year. And Meta obliges those requests about 90% of the time. So once again, these are tens of thousands of requests for Meta to take down content voluntarily. There's no legal obligation. And Meta says, yep, we can do that 90% of the time, which is actively allowing for the Israeli government to censor content that it does not like. And this content is not just within the bounds and boundaries of the state of Israel, it's globally. And we also know that a lot of the reasons why Palestinian content is taken down is specifically because Meta's content moderation policies are informed and aligned with U.S. foreign policy. And there is, for example, a dangerous organization and individual list that Meta has, which essentially, if you are commenting or posting about any entity or individual on that list. It is extremely difficult to post content that does not get taken down. You have to be very specific in how you post about it for it not to get taken down. And that list is private, but has been leaked multiple times. And it is almost a direct parallel to the U.S. Foreign Terror Organization list. And it has a overrepresentation of Arabic, Muslim, and Palestinian entities and individuals, many of which are in no way, shape, or form terrorist entities or organizations, and sometimes simply humanitarian aid groups. And because they're on the list, that makes it much more difficult to post about Palestine. Something else that is directly aligned with U.S. foreign policy is Meta has created a carve out in its hate speech policy for Zionist, which we know Zionist or Zionism is a political ideology that is very separate from any sort of religious or ethnic or racial identity. And all of those latter identities certainly should be protected within a hate speech policy. A hate speech policy, to my knowledge, nowhere else has ever protected a political ideology. And within Meta's hate speech policy, they have created a carve out to allow certain protections for people if they are being attacked for being Zionist, which is very unique and I would say inappropriate in many ways. And it also is very difficult to be critical of the state of Israel, which once again the UN has found is committing genocide, because criticism, legitimate criticism of the state of Israel, is oftentimes conflated as anti-Semitism, which is also very parallel with current U.S. governmental federal policies.
That's Eric Seip of Hanle speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level.